Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Blow a bugle in my ear to get my attention. Well, the bugle blew in Connecticut, East Coast, USA, one winter evening. I was walking from the laboratory in the night. You know how you get a feeling someone is there? I did. I turned around and there he was. I hadn't the slightest idea who he was. This handsome figure, dressed in a long orange robe, with a shock of fear you wouldn't believe, was in my hallway, looking at me silently. I nearly jumped out of my skin. As fast as I had seen him, he was gone. Well, it happened a second time, not too much later. I was in my meditation room, and the same figure was standing when I came out of meditation. I rubbed my eyes. He was still there. He motioned as if I was to do something with his feet. I knelt down and touched his feet. As I looked up, he was no longer there. This time I didn't feel scared. I felt out of my mind. I didn't know which I needed more, spiritual or professional medical help. I was determined to find out who this fellow was that visited me. I certainly wasn't going to tell my wife. Off I went to the Fort of Spiritual Knowledge in New York City, Samuel Weiser's bookstore. I approached the clerk. I described my visitor. I wanted to know if there was any book about someone who looked like the description of my visitor. He returned and handed a packet of whitish gray powder and a book titled Holy Man and the Psychiatrist, written by Dr. Samuel Sandweiss. Now I knew that the name of the form was Satya Sai Baba. Was I in for a surprise when I recognized that the recurring dream had been of Shirdi Sai, Satya Sai and Prema Sai walking up the hill night after night for many years. The figure in the flame was also him. On my first visit to Prashantinilayam, which is a story in itself, I was granted an interview with Baba. As I entered the room, he said, "All I have given you, and you have never been happy one moment in your life. I came to you twice. Would you do something for Swami?" My answer was, "Yes, of course." Swami went on, "Be happy." I had told absolutely no one at that time of the visit. In a 1994 interview, Swami said to my wife and myself, "I came to you 30 years ago." He said it right out of the blue. 1964 was the year when we had experience of Shirdi Sai Baba in the cabin, and that was indeed 30 years ago. Who was the royal little girl in the cellar when I was at my wit's end? I believe it was Baba in the form of baby Krishna welcoming me as a spiritual baby onto his path. Thank you, Swami. Unquote. Now, dear listeners, with that brief backgrounder, I'm happy to play the talk that Mr. James Sinclair delivered to the students of the Sai University in the year 2002. Since I found such value in every word Mr. Sinclair spoke, I suggest that you, dear listeners, also spare your full attention to this mega dose of self-confidence for the next 20 minutes, please. And I'm confident and super self-confident, thanks to Mr. Sinclair's talk, that you will also find great worth in everything he says, which clearly comes from a place of deep personal conviction. That part is hard to miss. Have a listen, please.
Sairam brothers, and you all are brothers. We may have somewhat older bodies or somewhat younger bodies, but in truth, really, where is the difference? Only a point, let's say, on this lifetime scale of where you stand on the long run to our beloved Swami's feet. Let us pray for a moment that these words may be Swami's words, that the message may be his message, and most especially, that the hearing of this message in these hallowed halls will be heard from that place of silence in which he dwells, containing us all, being us all, supporting us, giving us meaning, giving us direction, giving us purpose, giving us worth, giving us confidence, and giving us the success that only can be reached at his feet. Amen. Gentlemen, you have the greatest, strongest, most effective, most practical, realistic, profitable asset on earth, in the heavens, in the cosmos, wherever, however, anywhere that has ever been. Because in this sense, self-confidence is confidence in that great self which is embodied in our lifetime on this planet, in this earth, right here, who speaks to us daily and kids us into believing that there may be a person there. But in truth, the whole, the absolute, complete Godhead is here supporting, teaching, instructing, giving, loving, caring for all of us. And no matter where we go in life, no matter what role we play, no matter what risk we take, no matter what we undertake, consider for a minute that the most powerful, the most wonderful totality is there in us, around us, above us, below us, in every corner of the compass. So how in the world can you ever be afraid of anything? How can you fail to take the honor of a risk when you know who and what you are? How can you ever not have self-confidence when the self in whom you place the confidence is not that small self either speaking to you or sitting in the chair? Let me assure you, I have not done anything. I am not a great, successful predictor of all business activities and CEO that knows everything. All I can tell you is, centered on him, act, and you won't fail. You can't fail. The world will see you as the most active person possible if you'll only step up and take that risk. Forget the past. Don't speculate on the future. Don't be structured by what society says you should be. Be what you know you are. Dare to be divine. I had the privilege of hearing Swami in the interview room, listening to the bhajans being sung outside at that time, and hearing them say, "Don't they know they're divine?" Dare to be what Swami tells you you are. You are not simply a temple on feet. You are all of what Swami teaches. And on that basis, recognize that the business of business and the business of life are exactly the same. There is no difference. What you practice in your life, what you practice in your home, is exactly what you're going to practice in your office. Regardless of what the profession is, you might teach, you might be a technician, you might be a physician, you might be a businessman, you might be a risk taker like myself. Whatever it is, every single action, every single thought, every single conversation, contract, dealing, relationship, management, comes from only one place. Look at how simple it is. Let's not make this complex. Centered on me, act. Sai Krishna taught it to Arjuna. Our beloved Sai teaches it to you and to me. And we have no fear. The only terrorist is the ego. The force against terrorism is the divine. It is absolutely accessible if we'll only get out of its way. Finding Swami is letting Swami find you. Seeking that silence that you've all experienced is not doing anything. What it's doing is ceasing, stopping something wonderful from happening. If I appear lost in thought sometimes, or simply keeping to myself, it is myself that I'm keeping to, but with a capital S. Are you going to objectively refer your lives, or are you going to self-refer your lives? Many things happen. Even in the last few days, I've had some minor revolutions of partners. I've had to deal with concerns because the world is not necessarily, in some people's experience, a pleasant environment, and therefore they fear that others will do to them. But because I firmly, totally, completely, and utterly believe in the absolute theory of management, which is management by the absolute, I would be too nervous to cheat, lie, or steal. So I conduct myself by placing my partner's interests in front of my own interest. But I don't go around advertising the fact that I've done that. And then a problem like had come up in the last 2 or 3 days surfaces, where a partner is concerned over a major contract to be signed this Monday with a major mining company, that I might place my own interest in front of their interest, when revealed to them that in fact here is the documents and here is what we've done, and we're sharing with you things that the contract doesn't call for us to share with you, and that we've placed your interest in front of ours, and so much so that you'll be paid directly, not even through the corporation, then some partners of mine stand in awe of the fact that they've been taken care of. So here's an American dealing with conservative Islamic partners in East Africa who are extraordinarily concerned that their interests wouldn't be taken care of, only to find out that in the world of Sai, there are no differences at all. So the first message I carry to you is a simple one. Believe in yourself. The only risk is not taking a risk. Recognize that namaste, the God in the interviewer and the God in you, is the same God. So who are you talking to? Have no concern. Be at ease. And don't let any prior socialization interfere with the fact of you knowing who you are, what you can accomplish, how you're going to accomplish it. And as you begin on these careers, don't forget for a moment that the business of business and the business of life are exactly the same. And don't get into these great conundrums, these Gordian knots of, well, if I saw my employer doing this and I saw that, simply behave. Stand for what's right. Do no evil. Do no wrong. Don't lie, steal, or cheat. for yourself or for anyone else, who do you trust? The corporation? The government? The newspaper? Or Psi? If you trust in our beloved Baba, then you trust in his teachings. And practice them. Not carry a flag around saying, I do this. But help ever and hurt never as a principle, not as a rallying call. And what is success? Define it. What are your treasures? Who is your boss? And where is your bank? Swami is my boss. My treasure is pleasing him. My bank is in karma. And success to me is doing my duty. Remember that success is not a product of the means, but rather success will surround sattva. Sattva is a magnet. Proper action, dharmic action, action based on principle will be a magnet to your success. Not manipulation, not strategy, not game playing. Be the men you are. Be the heroes that Swami knows you are. You're not here by accident. This is not a mistake. This is not free education, so I'll cooperate for the period of time. This is an honor. You are special forces of the divine. And the divine is a special force within you for good. And the war is a war against the terror created by the ego. And there are very simple ways of fighting that. Do not let a thought enter your mind as it enters into the temple wearing its shoes. Don't let negative thinking run you. Don't run negative films in your mind. Accept the good, the great. Don't accept the small and restricted. If the small and restricted find their way into the temple of your mind, stop. Don't fight the thought, but see it. And while innocently seeing that thought, feel that silence. Act centered on me is not doing anything. It's ceasing, stopping something wonderful from happening. There has never been a different teaching. There have been different times. There have been different forms. But there has only been one avatar. And that avatar is here and now. And that avatar tells us there is no difference between you and I except one. I know who I am, and you'll find out who you are. Swami to me. In the late 1980s. And I believe firmly, I believe completely, that this is the most practical teaching, the most magnificent teaching, the most concise teaching, the most valuable, and it's yours. You are not just students in a university. You are not thrown out onto a competitive face of a world, large and fearsome. You are all the strength there is. You are all the wealth there is. Where is there lack in the self? What is a recession? Something in somebody's mind. Something that happened to somebody else. I have no recession. I'll never have a depression. Abundance is like air. Just breathe it in. When I say I've done nothing, I'm telling you that I see, and you will, inaction in action. Now, people will say, in an article will say, that I might be apparently an extremely competitive man. Let me tell you, I'm not. You will know everything you need to know when you need to know it if you will trust that silent presence that sits behind every word, and more so, and equally so, behind every hearing. Learn to listen. Don't think about your answer when somebody's speaking to you. Drink in what they're saying. In the silence of your not running some intellectual argumentation while the professor is speaking, while you're listening to an associate in business, the answer will come. Even if you need to be silent for a moment, a minute, or 2 minutes, or more after the completion of what's been said, don't let it embarrass you. It's the silence that packs all of everything, power and reason, action, and the way to act. And every day, out of that door, steps that silence that underlies you and I, that underlies this universe. So where is the significant problem? If you bring anything out of what I've come to say to you today, bring self-confidence, in confidence in the self, that self is totally there for you, that accessing the self is only getting out of its way, and getting out of its way is shutting up and being silent. Learn to listen. In learning to listen, again, you're not doing anything. You're shutting down the volume so that the voice that we must hear, we can hear. Trust completely. And go out into the world and let unfold divine will by not willing, in a sense, how that will happen. I'm not suggesting that you don't have goals and that you don't have plans, that you don't have objectives, that you don't order your life. Because I see order here that I've never seen before. If I see shoes lined up, if I see men stand, if I see a presentation prepared for but looking totally natural, I see an order that I've never seen before. And the divine is orderly. The mind is disorderly. And I don't see forced order. I see natural order. I don't see strain. So I see tremendous capacity. I see tremendous potential. I know that the underlying foundation is the strongest. And I wish and have shared with you the secret to whatever success may be apparent in me. I don't have to accumulate. I don't have to worry about the results. I only have the honor of doing. And doing from a foundation of silence is the easiest thing in the world. So the article said, yes, Mr. Sinclair is different. Yes, they might call me a loner. But that loner is just those moments when conversation is in truth inappropriate and silence is restful, loving, embracing, enlightening, and is the fuel for action. They find inexplicable that I could address crowds of many thousands, that I could talk to a president as easily as I can speak to a beggar in the street. And if that's what a loner is, it's a very strange kind of loner. I don't believe that I'm a loner. I believe that I hold on to the feet of the Absolute and take every possible moment, not wasting time, to be there, then to come out and act as my duty calls. Now, I'm not completely familiar with the forum, but I might ask our administrators. If you have any pressing questions developed out of what I've just said, lead me in the direction you'd like me to go. So if there are any questions, and I do invite them, about future, about success, about how a businessman deals with the world at large, if I haven't made it clear to you, please, in the closing moments, would you ask me? Which is now, could I invite questions, please? I haven't done that well. Well, then, if there are no questions, go to the ultimate answer. When you find yourself shocked, when you find yourself lost, when you find yourself uncomfortable with something, don't push that out of your mind. But allow the silence you know is there, that special silence that you've heard, as it were, on the veranda during bhajans, in the moments of quiet, in the moments of darshan. Allow that silence innocently, defined as without intellectual speculation, to be there, as the problem is also there. And recognize that the solution to that problem is racing to you with a speed and determination that nothing can stop. And know that you have simply gotten out of Swami's way. Om Sai Ram.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, India. The time at the Radio Sai Studios right now is 10:15 a.m. and today is the 12th of December 2013 and you're tuned to Morning Glory on Radio Sai's Asia Stream. Now, we have just been advised by some very prompt and attentive listeners that the first few minutes of Morning Glory did not air properly due to issues of internet connectivity at our end. So, in order to help you put this talk that you just heard into some context, and given its relevance to this talk, I feel it's very important for me to repeat the brief backgrounder that I was trying to give the listeners about the astounding journey to Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba by Mr. James Sinclair of the USA. So, please indulge me and allow me to read. I think none of you have heard this, and once you know the story, you'll be able to put the talk into a better context. Mr. James Sinclair, also known as Jim Sinclair, CEO of Tanzanian Royalty Exploration, a precious metal specialist and a commodities and foreign currency trader of international acclaim, has been deeply inspired by the divinity and wisdom of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. Mr. James Sinclair, I beg your pardon, has authored numerous magazine articles and three books dealing with precious metals, trading strategies, and geopolitical events and their relationship to world economies and the markets. As a reputed businessman, Mr. Jim Sinclair has made a very big mark for himself in the field of mineral prospecting. His enormous business success aside, this Wharton Business School graduate was drawn to Bhagwan Baba in a very dramatic manner, which definitely makes for a thrilling story. In March 2005, Radio Sai's e-journal Heart to Heart published an article in which Mr. Sinclair shared his story of coming to Baba briefly, and today I will read out excerpts of it for you so that you can quite figure out why this speech by Mr. James Sinclair was so based on conviction. In his article, in Heart to Heart, he says, and I will quote him, "How is it possible, I used to wonder, that I was born at this time and age? As a Christian, it seems so unfair that here I was in the 1950s and Jesus was on this planet 2,000 years ago. I used to pray as I drove to New York City for business work. I know you are out there, but I can't find you, dear Lord. Instead, you must find me. These prayers were not wasted. They were heard and answered in the positive. I will tell you of an event that at that time seemed shocking, but would take 30 years to become fully clear. It has to be kept in mind that neither I nor my wife at that time had any understanding or inclination towards Eastern tradition or philosophies. In 1964, just a short while after our marriage, as my wife and I were going to sleep, I saw an old man standing over my bed in the moonlight. My feeling was not one of fear, but rather like one has while a mother is looking at her son. The old man then turned and walked across the room and through the wall. Just then, my wife said in a loud voice, "Jim, are you awake?" She screamed, since she was watching the old man as he walked through the wall. Barbara had never seen anything like that in her life and was shaken by the experience. Now let us leave this experience and move ahead to 1968. Our married life had produced our first daughter. Business was not going well. My health was not so good. The Internal Revenue Service, or the IRS, was looking for me. I had just sold my car to pay the month's rent for our living quarters. I was frustrated by the way things were going. One day, it just became too much for me to bear. I went into my cellar where I had a desk. I sat down and prayed. "I don't know who you are. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you are. But this I do know. You are. So you have to take over because I have made a mess of everything." I resolved not to leave the cellar till the divine literally took over, whatever that meant. All of a sudden, I looked to my right and saw what appeared to be a little royal child dressed in gold and jewels. The child had long hair, so I thought it must be a girl. Suddenly, all my fear was gone. I was totally at ease. I got up and went upstairs. The fun was about to begin. I began to meditate twice a day. The environment slowly began to improve. I had an interesting experience. My meditation was on the light from a candle. Every time I started my meditation looking at the candle flame, I saw a little fellow in the flame wearing an orange robe with a great shock of black hair. Then I would transcend thought. I also began to have the same dream every single night. It went on for years. I saw myself walking up a hill, led by three men in the darkness of night. One was an old man in white. One looked somewhat like Jesus Christ. The one in the middle had an orange robe. The dream occurred night after night for years. At that time, I had no knowledge of Shirdi Sai Baba or Satya Sai Baba. For that matter, I had no idea of an avatar and did not know what the word meant. Now we move ahead another 18 years to 1984. I have been meditating now for 15 years. I am a vegetarian and I keep a special room in my house for my meditation. Now comes the spectacular story. Please understand that I don't feel special in any way. In fact, I believe that someone had been knocking on my door for a lifetime. I was too stupid to know. Therefore, this person had to blow a bugle in my ear to get my attention. Well, the bugle blew in Connecticut, East Coast, USA, one winter evening. Dear listeners, if I may pause here, this is where I think the Morning Glory script came on, or the program came on. All the preceding portions you had missed, but I seek your indulgence just to read the next three paragraphs and I'll be done with it. So I'll go back to Mr. Sinclair's story in his own words. And he says, and I quote him, "I was walking from the lavatory in the night. You know how you get a feeling someone is there? I did. I turned around and there he was. I hadn't the slightest idea who he was. This handsome figure, dressed in a long orange robe, with a shock of hair you wouldn't believe, was in my hallway, looking at me silently. I nearly jumped out of my skin. As fast as I had seen him, he was gone. Well, it happened a second time, not too much later. I was in my meditation room, and the same figure was standing when I came out of meditation. I rubbed my eyes, he was still there. He motioned as if I was to do something with his feet. I knelt down and touched his feet. As I looked up, he was no longer there. This time I didn't feel scared. I felt out of my mind. I didn't know which I needed more, spiritual or professional medical help. I was determined to find out who this fellow was that visited me. I certainly wasn't going to tell my wife. Off I went to the Fort of Spiritual Knowledge in New York City, Samuel Weiser's bookstore. I approached the clerk. I described my visitor. I wanted to know if there was any book about someone who looked like the description of my visitor. The salesman returned and handed a packet of whitish-gray powder and a book titled Holy Man and the Psychiatrist, written by Dr. Samuel Sandweiss. Now I knew that the name of the form was Sathya Sai Baba. Was I in for a surprise when I recognized that the recurring dream had been of Shirdi Sai, Sathya Sai and Prema Sai walking up the hill night after night for so many years? The figure in the flame was also him. Unquote. So dear listeners, against that background, let's talk about the talk by Mr. James Sinclair that he delivered to the students of the Sai University in 2002. Did you like it or did you absolutely love it? We really want to know your thoughts. Listener feedback is very important to us. We welcome your emails as always at listener@radiosai.org. Now, given that we had to rejig the program because we lost the first 10 minutes or so, I think at this time I'll have to bid you goodbye and wish you well for the rest of your Sai Sam awesome day. And not without leaving you with the next part of our ongoing Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Sai University alumnus, Brother Gautam Dutt. He is, of course, in conversation with Radio Sai's Mr. Bishuprushti. Sai Ram, be well till we meet next Thursday on Morning Glory. Do whatever it takes to stay inspired and in a positive and grateful mood. Over now to Mr. Gautam Dutt. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations on Radio Sai with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. And today, we have Mr. Gautam Dutt once again. In fact, we have already met a couple of times, and there is so much that he can share with us. There is a treasure trove of memories of staying at Bhagwan's lotus feet for almost 2 decades, that what we have done is probably we have only scratched the surface, and there is still so much. And so I requested sir to come again to the studios, and as I mentioned to you, sir was my English teacher when I was studying in Vrindavan. And in the previous sessions that we have had, he began talking about his journey to Swami, how Bhagwan very mysteriously and really magically brought into his fold, how he became a student in his university, and the reshaping of his personality that began once he was under his lotus feet studying in his university. And he mentioned about one of the highlights of his stay in Prashantilam, the Kodai trip, and of course how he was blessed with the opportunity of becoming a faculty member and joining the Vrindavan campus. So there is so much that he has shared, but as I mentioned to you, that is still perhaps so little of what we know of his moments with Bhagwan. So today we'll try and see what more we can capture of his days with Bhagwan. And before we proceed, let me just mention a few details about his stay in Prashantinilayam for the benefit of those who missed the previous episodes. Gautam Dutt sir joined the Prashantinilayam campus in 1984 for his bachelor's in arts, and he went on to do his master's MA in English, which he completed in 1989. And as I mentioned, after this, he had the opportunity of joining the Vrindavan campus to teach English, and which He did for 14 years till 2003. Later, he moved to the Middle East, to the Gulf country of Sultanate of Oman, where he currently resides, working as head of the Department of English in Caledonian College of Engineering. So that is, in brief, his stay in Swami in terms of facts, but in terms of experiences, it is unending. So, welcome once again, sir, to the studios of Radio Sai.
Sairam, thank you so much for inviting me once again. And it's always lovely to share Swami's experiences with the devotees and with the students and all those who are listening. So, where do you want to begin again?
Yeah. Well, the last time we were discussing about your days as a student in Bhagwan's university, you mentioned about the Kodai trip. That was one of the really unforgettable memories during your student days.
Yes.
So, if there's anything more about the student days that you would like to share, I think that would be nice.
Well, I think the period of my student days, there is still so much, you know, to talk about. And I'm going to quote this again for the sake of the listeners.
Yes.
You know, in the Bhagavatam, it is said that if Ganesha were to use the whole earth as a parchment and the sea as the ink, he wouldn't have enough to write the leelas of the Lord itself. And that's exactly how it is. So, there were many, many lessons to be learned, you know, at the lotus feet. And if you think very deeply about it, it was like every moment, you know, was a lesson. Every moment was, there was something to learn about Baba. And it was not only about learning, it was also the beautiful interaction with Bhagwan, you know, in the interaction of the soul and the Lord.
Yes.
The interaction of the individual, you know, with the Almighty. And how he would react to what you're thinking, how he would react to what you're feeling, you know, how he would react to what you're seeking, you know. And of course, all the time and during the whole process of learning and growing, there was the polishing that always took place.
Yes,
you know?
Polishing the mirror, as you call it.
Yes, polishing the mirror. So that, you know, you are able to achieve the goal, the purpose of life. So, you know, this is a very complex structure. And I think Bhagwan was, we can call him Bhagwan for the very sake. My father has a very beautiful point of view, you know, he used to say, after Swami used to retire, you know, after bhajan and his meals, he would retire to his room and he would say, people think that he's retired, but now he's the busiest.
Yes.
Because he's the one who's pulling the strings, you know,
yes,
and he's creating the circumstances, he's creating the situations to test you,
yes,
to build your willpower, to polish your mirror, you know, and things like that, and get rid of your vasanas,
exactly,
and to develop your, you know, good senses. And he would interact with you in so many ways. He would interact with you as your mother,
yes,
you know, as your father, as your guru, as your guide, as your friend. So, there were so many, each moment would be different, you know.
Exactly.
And each moment would be a learning experience.
Yes.
That was the beauty of living with Baba. And I sometimes equate it to a festival. For me, living in Puttaparthi with Bhagwan, each day was like a festival. You know, it was a riot of colors, it was a riot of experiences, it was a riot of joy, you know, and song and dance, you know, everything.
Exactly.
So, it was so beautiful. And I think that is the only thing that sustained us, because if you took all that away, there was actually nothing else, you know. So, it was only Baba who brought all this color and this light and this beauty, you know.
Exactly.
And the music and
I remember speaking to one old student who had done engineering in IIT and he came here. And he said what really fascinated him about Swami is, with Swami, spirituality was fun.
That's a beautiful way to describe it, yes. With Swami, spirituality was fun. It was
so,
not,
you know, he thought people outside colleges might think that, you know, what kind of things students in Baba's University will be doing. You know, life will be boring, you have to sit there for bhajans and meditation and that's all life is, you know, really dull and insipid. But you're still, I was really so shocked because I came here, this was true joy, you know, the kind of entertainment that he had to indulge in IIT campus was very different. It was, here, it is such a wholesome kind of entertainment. It is wholesome joy.
Yes.
It is so soul-fulfilling bliss.
You know, in management, they have a concept where if you want to teach leadership to somebody, the best way to teach it is to be in the company of a leader.
Yes.
So, when you are in the company of the divine, you don't just become a leader. You know, you tend to absorb the qualities of the divine. That is an opportunity of a lifetime. Not one lifetime, but many lifetimes.
Exactly.
And we don't know when we are going to get that opportunity again. So I think the fortunate thing was that here you were with a personality who was divine, and whether you liked it or not, it rubbed off on you.
Yeah.
In some way or the other.
Yes.
You know? And of course, if you tended to dive into the ocean, then you kind of became more a part of it.
Yes.
So it was just a question of degrees, that's
yes,
all.
Yeah.
But everybody.
You cannot be untouched.
Would be touched by that personality.
Yeah. So what were those moments, you know, when you felt that aspect, as you mentioned, the purity and the pure personality of Swami was slowly rubbing off on you, you know, some of cleansing process was happening in you, you felt that definitely your mirror was being polished, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and that was because, you know, when the Divine chooses you, then he makes sure that the polishing always takes place.
Yes.
You know, either
that is only
in his physical presence, or even when you're far away. Sometimes we used to think, you know, Baba is not watching, but he would be. I still remember sitting right in front in the mandir. Of course, like I said, Baba was a strict disciplinarian. You know, he used to tell us, when you walk, you have to look down at your toes and walk.
He used to say that?
Yes, while walking, don't look up. And the reason is, it led to controlling your senses. So, now, for a young person to do that is very difficult.
Very difficult.
Very, very difficult. But if you made the effort, you would evolve spiritually. And we did that. We used to sit. And then after Baba used to go into the interview room, the moment he entered the interview room, we used to close our eyes and start meditating. No talking. Because if you talked, you know, message would come to Mr. Kutumrao. This person is talking too much, tell him to leave the veranda and go out. So he used to be a strict disciplinarian. And sometimes, you know, our monkey mind, we would think that, you know, Baba is in the interview room, or Baba is in the bhajan hall, or Baba is not watching us. And we tempted to do things, you know. For example, you know, Baba created a pen in the veranda for a student who was sitting beside me. And he went in to give interview. So, I was sitting in the first line, and so was the student. I was tempted to see the pen, because Baba created it. So, all I did was, I asked the student, I said, can I see the pen? And he showed me the pen, and I gave it back to him. This was the amount of conversation that took place. Baba walked out after the interview and walked straight to me. And he said, where am I? The question took me by surprise. And, you know, he was quite stern. So I just looked at him. I didn't know what he expected. I didn't know what to say. I just kept quiet. Tell me. You know how Swami says, he closed his fist and shook it, and he said, tell me, where am I? So I just kept quiet. And, you know, I was flabbergasted. I couldn't answer. So he, do you think I'm in the interview room? So I kind of nodded my head. Ah, you think I'm in the interview room? I'm everywhere, sir. I'm everywhere. He said, I'm watching you all the time. And then I said, why were you talking? So I was surprised because I didn't talk. From my point of view, I didn't talk. So I said, Swami, I didn't talk. Normusko, don't tell lies. You were talking. I said, Swami, I don't think I talked. You know, very slowly, because everybody is listening and it's embarrassing. And then he said, you talk to this boy. Oh, then I realized. Then I said, Swami, but I wanted to see the pen that you created. What's your problem? Did I create the pen for you? You mind your own business. He said, and then he told the boy, why did you show him the pen? You should have told him to shut up. I created the pen for you, not for him. And you know, he threatened, he said, give me the pen and I'll take it back. And the boy fell at Swami's feet and Swami, I'm very sorry. So I put him also into a lot of trouble. And then I realized that I had made a mistake, and before I could say anything, he said, 1,000 eyes are watching you. You are sitting right in front here. So many people are watching you. You have to be an example. You should not be talking. And then before I could apologize, he turned around and he left. Now here was a problem. Baba is angry and he didn't give me a chance to apologize. So like I said earlier, I don't know when I would get a chance to apologize, number one. And I don't know whether he's going to be angry for how much time.
Yes.
And that, for us as students, was worse than punishment in hell. You know?
Yes.
So, he went back into the interview room, and I think there were about 45 minutes left for the bhajan. Those 45 minutes, each breath of mine was spent in prayer. You know.
Somehow you want this chapter to end.
Yeah. Not only to end, I didn't realize that I had committed a blunder.
Mm.
I didn't realize that I had made a mistake. And when I did, you know, I wanted to apologize.
Yes.
And so my prayers were quite sincere. But, you know, Baba always wants to teach you a lesson. And he knows how much time it will take for you to imbibe that lesson. So, you know, he's the perfect guru, teacher. So there I was praying, and, you know, I didn't look left, right, nothing. I just closed my eyes and I was praying, sincerely praying. And my eyes were constantly on that door, you know, expecting Swami to come out. And he didn't. He didn't come out. The bhajan started. And I said, now it's over, it's finished. Now I'm in big trouble. And he came out. You know, once the bhajan starts, then at some point of time he comes out. He used to sit on the chair in the bhajan hall. He didn't even look towards me. He just went straight into the bhajan hall and he sat on his chair. And then from the chair also sometimes he would gaze out and all, nothing, you know. There was no sign of any kind of mercy. So I kept on praying. And then, you know, my heart kept on sinking. Aarti started. And Baba stood up to take the aarti. And my heart sank completely. My heart was right in my boots, as I said. So, you know, I was almost on the verge of tears. And then he descended from his throne and was walking towards the mandir. His hand reached out for the interview room door. And my heart was like as if it was screaming for Baba's pardon. And then, just as he reached towards the door, he turned, he saw me, and he said, "Kya?" That was all that I needed. Like an arrow, you know, I was right there at his feet, and I said, "Swami, I'm extremely sorry. I'll never do it again." And he said, "Acha, acha," you know, in a very gentle tone and very compassionate, just like a mother. And he said, "Do namaskar," you know. So I was fortunate. He allowed me.
He could sleep that night peacefully.
Yeah, I think he brings you to that point, you know, and he knows whether you're going to do it again or you're not going to do it again. And then there is, as he said, the motherly aspect, you know. When you are sincere in your prayers, then he melts.
Exactly.
So I think that's what happened. And he forgave me and I was saved. That's all I can say. But I never made that mistake again.
You never speak in the mandir.
No. Even till today, I don't like to speak to anybody when I'm in the mandir. It became such a habit that even when I'm at home and after bhajan, you know, people, you know, sometimes they approach you and they want to talk to you. I don't like to talk to them. I don't like to talk to anybody.
Even after bhajans?
Yes. So actually, Baba's injunction is that after bhajan also, you should not speak to anybody. In fact, you should find a quiet corner.
Exactly.
And meditate for a few minutes so that you imbibe the divine vibrations. And this is very important. Most people don't give importance to that, but it is important. And he doesn't want anybody, when they come for bhajan, to socialize. It's not meant to be a place to socialize.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's meant to be a place where you do namaswarana.
Yes.
So, that was what his teaching was.
Yeah, I remember you had this very powerful message from Swami where he had mentioned that, as you said, find a quiet corner after my darshan and just be yourself so that you absorb that divine energy. And
yeah.
I think while that was true, when we had the chance of seeing the physical form and, you know, sitting in front of the physical form during bhajans or during darshan, I think it is true even now when you attend a bhajan session. I think when you are sort of in that presence, when you are in a bhajan session, you are in that presence. And for you to absorb those sacred vibrations that are created in that period of, say, 45 minutes, 1 hour, so that you don't lose that opportunity to benefit from that. Perhaps it's important
now. Because, you know, it's all about the mind being focused.
Yes.
And the mind has to focus for you to be able to absorb the divine vibration. So, Namasmarana helps you to do that. And then you should not lose that opportunity again by, you know, jumping back straight into the world. You should allow it to take its time, you know, to absorb it right deep within you.
Yeah, you have spent so much time and energy to come for the bhajan session and make the most of it.
Yes, and even if you've really been doing the Namasmarana, you yourself won't feel like speaking for a few minutes.
That's definitely
and
true.
And I remember Baba once told a group of our students that he equated, you know, after his darshan, if you sat down quietly in a corner, as he said, and relived the darshan, he said it was equal to about hours of meditation. Just a few minutes of the silent sitting were equal to hours of meditation. So, you know, what he was trying to say is take advantage of this opportunity. But sometimes, you know, we are ignorant and sometimes we take things too lightly, I guess.
Yes. And, you know, you mentioned about meditation and I was just reminded of how you were so much into meditation before you came to him as a student and you had begun to get those kind of experiences which were vouchsafed and sort of confirmed by your Guruji at that time who taught you yoga and all that. So how was it after you came and became a student? Did you really continue on those practices of meditation?
Yes,
did Swami help you? Or what sort of guidance did you get from the Guru?
No,
Sadhguru was your Guru.
Yes, Lokaguru is what Swami called himself, Lokaguru. He didn't say, don't do this, don't do that. He encouraged you, you know. And that is the divinity, you know. He didn't change the path or he didn't put something new to me and say, don't do this. And you know Baba, he never said to anybody, you know, do so many thousands of japa or so many hours of meditation. Only thing is, he encouraged you in whatever practices you did and anything that was spiritual, you know, and which helped you to come nearer to the divine, he would encourage you to do. So I continued with my practices. I remember when I was in the hostel, I would get up at 2 in the morning.
2 in the morning?
2 o'clock in the morning, because it would take some time to get ready, 2:30. Then you know how we stay in the hostel. There are many boys in the room. We cannot disturb them. So I had to find a quiet place, you know, to do my spiritual practices. So sometimes I would go to the rooftop, the terrace, and sometimes I wouldn't find any place there. Then I would walk down to the institute. And then
early in the morning you walk to the institute?
Yeah, around 3 in the morning I would go up to the terrace in the institute because it used to be open. And I still remember I used to finish my rituals and then my yoga. And whenever I used to go to the institute, you know, it was so beautiful to do that because early in the morning the sun would rise. It was usually silent, you know, very silent. And the sun used to rise and then the monkeys used to gambol around, you know, where I was practicing my yoga. But they never disturbed me. And the first sound used to be the sound of the milkman coming from Anandpur, I think. And at that time, you know, the world would come to life. So by the time everybody got up around 5 o'clock in the morning, I would have finished everything and all my spiritual practices and so on.
So you did
throughout my student life I did that. In fact, I still remember one particular experience. Baba was coming to the college and we worked till late at night to prepare the stage and the sound system for Baba. I was in the maintenance group. And I think it became around 2 or 2:30 by the time we finished. So, you know, I took it for granted that since I've spent so much time, I could skip all my practices for that day and, you know, be fresh when Baba came to the college. So Baba was to come at 7. And so I caught a few hours of sleep and got myself ready. And 6:30, 6:35, we were waiting for Baba. And he came. And since I was in the group which was doing the maintenance, I was allowed to sit on the stage. As soon as he entered, the first question he asked me was, did you do your suprabhatam? And I said, of course, I had to speak the truth. I said, no, Swami. He said, why? And I said, we were working till late at night. He said, so what? So what? Then I realized that, yes, exactly, so what? Even if I slept late at night. And he said, you're lazy. He said, you're lazy. That's why you didn't get up. And don't miss Suprabhatam again. And I said, hey, Swami. And I didn't. So that's the way he used to teach. You know, we as human beings take a lot of things for granted. But later on, much later, in 1989 in Kodaikanal, in a very beautiful way he said to us, he said, you know, when you feed a dog food at a particular time, After some time, he starts appearing at your door. At that time, he doesn't have a watch or anything. But he starts coming at exactly the time when you are to feed it. He said, and if a dog can come at your door at that time, what about God? He said.
Swami mentioned that.
Yes. What about God? He said. So, when you're doing some spiritual practice at a particular time, then, you know, you should do it at that time. Because you never know, God may be waiting for you. You know? And then somebody asked Baba, he said, Swami, sometimes situation is such that you can't, for example, when you're traveling. And Baba gave a very beautiful piece of advice. He said, if you cannot, and if you're not in a position to do that, at least close your eyes and remember the time that you do that. Remember that at this time you do your puja.
You relive it in your mind.
Yes. So, with these kind of pieces of advice, you know, which was so practical and true sadhana, you know, there was no scope of not progressing.
Exactly.
You know, he was always there. He was always there to correct you and to put you back onto the right path.
I mean, he was constantly watching your progress, and that was the most important thing in the relationship.
Absolutely. And in another interview, I was thinking something in the hostel. And that evening, he happened to call me and my parents for interview. And then when he took us for the private interview, his first question to me was, "Kya letter bhejta hai?" You know, I was surprised because I never wrote any letter to Baba. In fact, in all my stay, I never wrote letters to Baba.
Never wrote letters.
No. Because he didn't like it. You know, once I did take a letter and he said, you know, he just pushed it aside and said, I know what you're thinking, I know what you're in there. So,
oh my God.
It's not an advice to everybody. It's an individual relationship.
Yeah,
you know,
that is, the Sadhguru has a particular path and a particular way.
Yeah, the kind of rapport that you develop with that. And that is the greatest opportunity.
Absolutely.
So he said to me, he said, "Kya letter bhejta hai?" And I was like, "Swami, I didn't write any letter." He said, no, you did. And then he realized that I'm not getting it. So he said, "In the hostel, kya sochta hai?" And then I said, "Oh, yes, Swami, I was thinking like this in the hostel." And he said, I know, it reached me. And then, you know, he gave me a reply to what I was thinking. So,
the moment you have thought a particular thing, the letter has reached him.
Exactly. And for every person is different. You know, I had a classmate whom Baba used to always call with me whenever he used to call for interview. And for him, it was a different relationship altogether. Even with my brother, it was a different relationship altogether, you know. For example, my brother was allowed to ask any kind of questions that he wanted to.
Okay.
But I wasn't. If I, you know, protested or said something, he said, "Keep quiet. Narvosku." So one couldn't take it for granted that just because Baba is behaving with one person in a particular way, he would behave in the same way.
You can never ever predict or put a pattern to the way he deals with one person.
Absolutely. And you know, this is what I told the students also after I became a teacher. You have to develop your own rapport with Baba, not with anybody in between. Yes, you know, he used to always say, love and law go together. Yes, there was a law. There was a social law. There was a community law. But there's also the natural law and the divine law, which are much higher.
Yes.
So, as a soul, you have to develop, you know, a relationship with him, which is your own. And you have to follow your own heart, your own conscience, which guides you on this road. So that is very important. And that is one of the things that we were fortunate.
Yes.
When we came here, we developed that rapport with the divine, and I think we would never have done that otherwise. And this rapport is there for millenniums, you know, it's not for just 1 hour or a few weeks or months. It's a saga of millenniums, you know, from here on, you are going to be in touch. And this is something many people don't realize. You are from here on, whether it is this birth or the next birth or any other birth, you are going to be in touch with the divine. You know, this is one of the greatest pieces of grace that anybody can get. And I think people should realize that.
I think that is the greatest blessing that anyone has, especially if you come in as a student, when you had the chance of physical interaction with the divine. Because I think, as you are mentioning, the progress in our spiritual path, which would have probably taken, say, 10 janmas, probably just gets accelerated. So probably, you know, somebody might just do one thing, and in that 1 minute or 10 minutes or 10 seconds, you will get something which probably you would have taken 10 janmas to get.
Yes, very true. You know, as each group of students used to pass out, Baba used to give them interviews. And there was one particular group, Baba had given an interview, and he created a plate, a golden plate for them, in which all the 9 planets were etched, and, you know, it had all these symbols. And, you know, Baba told them, he said, rishis and munis would do penance for 10,000 years just to get a glimpse of that.
Of that plate?
Yes. And not only that, when I was reading the Bhagavad, one of the rishis, he did penance for thousands of years before Narayana appeared to him and gave him permission to get married. And here we were, you know, doing sports meet, some kind of, you know, gymnastics or some dance or, you know, some martial arts. And the divine was blessing you and, you know, showering you with his grace for simple things, you know, like that.
Hmm.
So, we're really fortunate.
Absolutely.
You know, first of all, when you are on a spiritual path, first of all, you have to attain the connection, the contact with the divine. That itself takes a lot of effort. And then once you have made that contact, then, you know, your interaction with the divine, that also takes a lot of effort. And a lot of effort in the form of penance, in the form of purification.
Yes.
And after that, you know, you may get what you want. But here, the divine was right in front of you. And, you know, people used to ask for simple things, you know.
Yeah, opposite.
That is what Baba used to say. He said, here I am ready to give you, but, you know, your vessel is not ready. He used to always constantly say that. So what he meant by that is purify your heart. I remember meeting Mr. Frank Baranowski.
Yes. Oh, you were there.
Yeah.
As a student when he came.
Yes, yes. He's the one who created the Killian photography and, you know, the instrument that could measure your auras. And we talked to him. He was like a small child when he used to sit in front of Baba, you know. He was like a small child. He used to wriggle with delight when his Baba used to be there. And he said to us, he said something very nice. He said, when Baba walks around, he suffuses you with his aura, you know. And for the hearts which are ready and open, you know, his love sinks in. But the hearts which are closed, it just surrounds that heart and just moves on, you know. So in the time period when you were seeing Baba, when he was physically around you, he used to say, drink deep. So how do you do that? You have to first prepare yourself for darshan. First prepare yourself for darshan, then you go, and when you sit for darshan, open your heart to him and let all his grace and his blessings sink into you and then absorb them. And this was a beautiful lesson from him. And the beauty was, he could see it. He said, I can see it.
Exactly.
I can see what is happening, you know. So,
and that's really amazing. And I tend to feel that that is true even now. Even now, if you sit in the Sai Kulwant Hall, and if you sit with that feeling of opening your heart to Swami during bhajans, or if you sit with that feeling of trying to connect with him sincerely, I think you will feel that difference of you being there.
Yes,
sitting.
Of course, this is a holy place, and this is his place, you know. So, I'm sure that it will be easier to connect with the divine. A lot of people come here just to do their sadhana. Many people I know, great souls, you know, they've come here, nobody knows that they've come and gone. They've come here just to complete their sadhana in a particular way, because that sadhana can be done only here, nowhere else. And they come and go quietly. So we don't know. You know, there, as Baba himself said, the divine is infinite. There's so many aspects which we are not aware of.
Yes.
You know, we're just aware of the ones which we are open to and which we have knowledge of, maybe. Otherwise, we missed out a lot of things.
Well, how was it for you when you heard that Baba has chosen to leave his physical form? You have spent so much time in close physical proximity.
Well, I miss him. As his form, as you call it, you know. I miss that form daily. It was, you know, beautiful to see him walking on the earth. It was beautiful to see the way he interacted with devotees. Even his smallest movement was captivating. So, anybody who has seen Baba physically would miss that. But I also realize that he's not limited by the physical form. He's divine. And I used to use a comparison. I don't know whether this comparison is appropriate or not. I used to have a lot of discussions with people, you know, who would say physical Baba and spiritual Baba and so on. And for me, I would use an example of a banana.
Mm-hmm.
I said, see, when you buy a banana from the market, it's a banana. Even though the skin is on it, it's still a banana. And then you peel the skin off and, you know, what is left inside is the banana. So the skin is now left, but the banana is still there. So the divine is still there, and he was the divine.
Vesture of Maya, whatever.
Well, you may call it Maya, you may call it anything. His physical form has certainly left, but that doesn't mean that it cannot appear, because I'm aware that it has appeared to a few people around the world. So it's not necessarily that it cannot appear again, it can. Even, for example, let's take the other avatars, Rama, Krishna. They came thousands of years ago and they lived their physical journey and then they also went back to their source. But people still see them. They have the darshan. Swami himself gave darshan to so many people in that form. So the form is not important. But as long as the divine was in that form, you know, it was beautiful. Now, the question is not about how you feel when the form was there and when the form left. When the form was there, it was easy to interact with it. But now that the form is left, it is not that easy, you know. So, when Baba was here, all those whose lives he touched were very fortunate. Now that he is physically not there, the ones who come after, he will certainly guide them, but at a different level. And they cannot imagine how it would... For example, we cannot imagine how it would be for the Gopikas when they lived with Krishna. How it would be for the villagers, the Gopalas, you know, when they played with Krishna. We don't know what kind of joy, what kind of bliss they experienced. We cannot imagine. The same way, in the future, when people talk about Baba, they will say, they must be enjoying great bliss, great joy, you know, when they had been in the presence of the physical form. Because they would not be able to experience that. So, that is the only thing that is different. But as divinity, he's still there. And he shows that every moment, every day. Especially when you need him.
Exactly.
Yeah.